What's up, everybody? I'm Rob. I'm half of the Wet Jeans podcast. Andy can't make it right now. He's in court fighting some BS triple homicide case. But we're the Wet Jeans podcast. If you like non-political, non-racist, intellectual content, give our show a listen, but be prepared to lose some brain cells.
Action Park Media.
Welcome to Victory, the podcast. I'm Doug Ellen.
Kevin Connolly. It's quiet in here today. It's you and I.
It's weird. There's a lot of weird things happening in Action Park.
Did you notice anything strange, different about the studio?
I noticed a lot of weird. First of all,
we went green. We went green with the lights.
Oh, okay. The lights, but there's cords everywhere.
Well, we're messing with the new technology, if you will.
And there's some giant screen. I can't even see
Scotty's
face. You
know what it is? It's a live editor. You cut live so we can go to YouTube quicker. Huh. For the fans.
Quicker than 2 years, you mean?
Yeah, quicker than...
I mean, they are waiting. Doug, people are waiting for the Doug, YouTube videos.
Ooh, Doug, I mean, you know what? Normally, I don't like your digs, but that was pretty funny.
I mean, I have to...
But what's going on? Are you mad at me? Have you been mad at me?
No, I just...
Have I gotten a little version of the... Our relationship is better now, so like... Our 2022 version of the silent treatment is different than our 2021 version.
I'm not a silent treatment. I think the thing is that people don't understand about me is I'm
there's a lot that people don't understand.
I'm a very accessible guy.
Yes, you are.
As long as it's a two-way street. So we can talk about what happened and the situation, but
I apologize. I really didn't know that I'm just realizing this morning I realized that I was getting
wasn't like, what am I going to talk to you about? I mean, it's like we spent days and days on, let's discuss it.
Sometimes there's not a lot to talk about.
We are shooting a new scene. I wrote a check for this new scene yesterday. Okay. I'm on the line here. Let's put it that way. There's a very good chance.
I know. You gave me the pep talk today.
Yeah, but forget the pep talk. There's a good chance. Like I wake up and have nightmares that I'll be 83 and working at Walmart. I'm not kidding. Like the money is going in. I am putting myself on the line. We know Foxman. Even though everybody, I think you and everybody thinks the show is great and I want to make it better. So
of course.
We're shooting another scene, which I am hoping will literally be the best scene in the show that was already really good. So we're casting it and, you know, we found Tramell Tillman. Some of you who listen to the Ramble On podcast may have heard like the weird editing because editor did
Trammell,
a good job. But
Trammell, you were saying Trammell.
Well, I was calling him by the wrong name. So anyway, hopefully I've got it right. But we cast him and then we needed another cast member. So Kevin Connolly is both producer, star, well, that's both. But anyway, that's all you
that
got.
That covers a lot. But, what the fuck else do you want me to do? You want me to fucking run the Teamster department as well?
But so what happened was Stock Tip became very excited about this role. And
what
we
a
said
shit show.
He could read for it.
I will. Let me give a little preface this with a little bit. In defense of Doug, not even in defense, but one of the things early on that was made crystal clear on Entourage, there was a rule set in Entourage. Doesn't matter if it's your girlfriend, my mom, it did not matter. If you wanted a friend, because, you know, the actors, everybody's got a friend, a lot of producers, writers, everybody's got a friend. Everybody reads.
Yeah.
Everybody
pays.
Unless
they're like, you know.
Unless it was Malcolm McDowell, whatever. Yeah. There were exceptions. But for these roles, you set the precedent early and Levinson as well. And that no matter who it was, you had to read.
And I also really believe a lot of people believe when there's one, two lines that you can just, anyone can do it.
That is not true. That is not
true. We know from Ramble On, like I watched this show Reacher. I saw Harvey Guillen, even though I didn't realize he was already a big star. I thought I discovered him, but he comes in this scene and I still have people 3 weeks after this screening that are like, that guy needs his own show. By the way, he has like seven of his own shows. But anyway, my point is I wanted, we have two more roles in this scene with you. I wanted them to be as good.
Right. It's very important to you that the performance is strong. But my point is, we talked about a couple actors, and I'm going to leave a couple of my buddies' names out of it, but the people that I suggested are guys with 75, 80 movie credits, right?
All right. Now I'm
so not saying this at all. And you're like, yeah, I know, and I know that he's done 80 movies. I still need to see him do this material. So it's barring whatever. So the point is,
this is where I understand now.
I'm complimenting you. So Doug, who will truly, Doug's thought is, what does it matter? Like anybody can read, right? So Doug, Ted Foxman, who finances the show, Doug wants him to read for the role.
Not I want him to read for the role. I thought he could be funny, but if he wanted to even attempt to get it, he's got to read for
it. And then you were like, well, you know, he didn't want to do it. Of course he doesn't want to read. He doesn't want to audition for his own show, right?
I don't care.
He either gets the role or he doesn't.
Yeah,
right?
I don't believe in it.
You don't believe in that? Right.
No.
Okay, and by the way, that's fair.
And especially
fair.
Like going back to, which we've talked on the show about before, Gary Cole, who, whether he's won an Emmy or not, he deserves
Some people just don't care. They love it.
Yeah, but like McGinley said on the show too, it's just like, it's part of the game. And again, now when you're talking about a role, this is not a, I hate to say it's not a big role, because I actually believe the guy we got is going to fucking crush this.
Doug, it's the old cliche. They're all big roles.
Yeah, and I really, truly believe that. But anyway.
This person has to be great.
Yeah, and that's why I say, so I think, and I don't want to get in a fight with you about it.
I'm not fighting with you.
But I think you recommended a couple of people, which I 100% believe could be great, but I just...
You want to see it.
I want to see it. Right. And I want to see, so the guy I got... you know, Larry Joe Campbell.
Right.
Hopefully I say that right, Sky. He's so good, this guy. And it was actually Ted Foxman's idea.
Okay.
He was in Wedding Crashers.
He's great. He's instantaneous and he's funny. And I get it. So, and listen, that wasn't a knock. I guess my point is that you've been consistent with this sort of thought or theory for years, but you'll also quite literally let anybody read.
Yeah, yeah.
So you tell Fox, when the guy that pays for it, hey, you know, you should put yourself on tape.
I also paid some.
Which is hilarious.
More this week.
It was hilarious to me. But Stock Tip Dave, did you tell Dave that who put that in his head? Dave,
I mean, I think that went on at the podcast.
I mentioned it on Ramble On that he wanted to read.
Yeah. Okay. And by the way, again, I need everybody to understand this, and I'm not trying to be rude. The DMs that are coming to me, it is rude. Like, everyone's like, I don't want to be rude, but I don't know how else to do it. Unfortunately, the way to do it is to submit it properly through an agent.
That's the best way to do it.
I just don't have the time to go through 10,000, you know, things. I wish I did.
It's not even anything, and I know it always feels like we're picking on Dave, but we're just using him as an example of somebody that, you know, I mean, listen, I love Dave. He's not qualified for it. And the same way that I'm not qualified to do golf. Audio and clips and the things that Dave does.
Or hockey.
I'm not qualified to do things
you're not qualified for that. You should have had a tryout for the adult hockey team.
Yeah, I wouldn't have made the team.
Kevin, I've got a lot of experience in annoying you, so that's why it was perfect.
I know that's what...
Are you giving spoilers away?
Dave, I mean, don't give spoilers
away. By the way, he has the script.
But not to mention, he's got the script, but it's watermarked with Stock Tip.
I know,
Dave,
so what are we going to do if it gets out there? We're going to kill him?
I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Dave, so I guess the point is that it's not anything against Dave. The same way I know that about Ted, it is a real actor's role. Like, you got to be an actor. You can't just, but I don't know. Somewhere along the line, I think Dave had a glimmer of hope in his eye that he had a shot at that role.
And also, just so we know, for Dave did get special access, and I did watch 15 of his audition tapes.
Dave, that was the other thing.
Over and over again. And again, not making fun of him. Like, he had the shot, and you get the shot. And
then he did one with sunglasses.
Yeah, but my point, I guess, was, which now I totally understand, and I get it. It's why Connelly and our relationship, I think, is getting better, because I have
to communicating.
Well, you are a little passive aggressive. You're mad, not mad. You're a little disappointed that I didn't.
I'm not. That was not the point of my thing. I'm saying that I believe that the person that I suggested, for, you know, as much as you could guarantee anything, I believe that 100% he would have gotten the job done. But the reason why I brought that up is because I was actually complimenting you that you guys set that precedent in 2003 and you still keep it. But I don't know where, maybe Scotty, somewhere along the line, Dave thought, I mean, Dave is walking around with the sides. I mean, I don't know
but
if there's spoilers in it. Can we do a social clip of Dave's audition?
After we sell this. No, we can't. I mean, maybe we could show his previews and his glasses and his taxi driver moments. And
I don't
stuff
know
like
that. That scene ruins anything, but okay.
Yeah, no. We can't. I mean, and again, as
I love Buck Dave, you know, listen, man, you don't want me running your Coinbase account either, right? But like,
no, but
I just wanted to give it a try. I got excited.
You did, and you gave it a try, and I'll give you that, man. You went for it.
And you know what? That's totally fine, because what I do want to say is
about your height.
There are people that can honestly, and I'm not saying Dave's not one of them. Like, you might be able to act in something, and Ted also, I said that, Foxman as well. Like, my friend, Joe Vitarelli, who did the music for a little movie called Kissing a Fool. Anyway, Joe is awesome.
But he also did like a little movie, like a big movie for something, right?
He's done a ton of big movies. But he did, you know, he did Cassavetes' movie, that I love, Sean Penn.
She's So Lovely.
She's So Lovely, which is an amazing movie. Anyway, Joe's a huge composer and does lots of things. But but his father had never acted a day in his life.
Right.
And they were trying to cast State of Grace, which is one of the great gangster movies of all time. Sean
it's
Penn.
So underrated that it doesn't even come up in the conversation. It's as good as any of
you
them.
You can't even get it on iTunes, any streaming service. Sean Penn, Gary Oldman, Robin Wright, they met on that movie.
Also, top, all of those actors, top of their game. Ed Harris, top of his game.
So, but Joe Vitarelli Sr., who's my friend Joe's father, had never acted, but Sean Penn is great friends with Joe Vitarelli, and he knows his father, and he's like, we can't cast this part. Why don't we just let your father read for it?
And anyway, he was the big, heavyset gangster. Like, he was, the boss of Boston. He was the one that everyone was afraid of in State of Grace.
Yeah. He was the guy that, after that movie, got analyzed this, and then the sequel, which they gave him like $2 million for. He had never acted a day in his life. He was like a computer engineer.
But there was, at a certain point, they sat around a table and read it and rehearsed it or whatever it was. It wasn't like, hey, I'll see you in hair and makeup.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is there are some people who can just get in front of a camera. And again, Dave, that might be a role he's more right for. The truth is, you're not even physically close to what I was looking for this part. And you'll see when you see the guy that I actually cast. But you did a fine job. But my point was with the Connolly situation is Connolly was so happy to talk about Dave's audition, but when I sent him the guy I was going to cast and said, hey, just check out his reel, what do you think? Radio silence. And now I get it. You're a little, and I'm not saying you're mad. You're like your friend, Doug, which I do believe would be awesome.
Doug, but I swear to God on anything that's important to me that there were no connections between those
all
things.
All right, okay.
I got it sort of in the middle of the
you got
something else.
You're stressed.
No, but no. I got it in the middle of, there was a lot going on, and I was under the impression that role, because I was even saying to Dave, I'm like, yo, Dave, there is an offer out to an actor on this role.
Yeah.
It's over. You didn't get the job, bro. You didn't get it. It's over. Oh, here's the other thing I wanted to say.
All right.
What Doug wanted to say, and again, this is, I don't know why I'm defending you after you're viciously attacking me. Your thought is like, yo, there's a casting director. This casting director, one of the best casting directors in the business, Sheila Jaffe, she will watch the tapes.
Yeah.
And then if Sheila were to call you and go, yo, you're not going to believe this, I got this guy named Stock Tip Dave, then you're willing to hear that. But your guy in the system,
I don't like
to be
biased.
The tapes go to the casting director.
I don't like to be biased. And honestly, the same way when the show, I mean, we have a mutual friend. We don't need to mention his name. He wanted to write on Entourage.
Young? he doesn't care, Mike, right?
Well, I mean, if we're going to tell the story, though, I said, Mike, I can't just jam you in on this show. I have other people that Steve Levinson, Mark Wahlberg.
HBO,
HBO. I said, here's what we do. You write a script, an Entourage spec. We give it to Levinson with no name on it, and we just say, what do you think? And whatever it is, Levinson, he read three pages and he shredded it and threw it in the trash.
So he wasn't being biased against Mike. He just didn't like it.
The writing of that thing. I mean, now, is he right or wrong? Mike's made 9 movies since then. So, and opened up for Sebastian
Maniscalco. Exactly.
So, but, you know, I don't like to, because I'm very, you know, I want to make sure that I have strong opinions, but when there's a personal connection, I want to make sure those don't get in the way, especially now, not to be an asshole. I got a lot of money on the line here. I got a lot of time on the line, and I got a lot of effort on the line. So, yeah.
Looking back on Victory, let's talk about who got straight offers.
On Entourage?
On Entourage.
Jeremy.
Well, Piven, right. But I was thinking on the sort of the guest star, but Piven.
Yeah. Guest stars.
But, you know, Beverly D'Angelo.
Beverly D'Angelo. I mean, this, you know, so many.
Not really so many. A lot of
them
read.
I'm trying to think of the big...
Malcolm McDowell probably didn't read.
No.
Right? Beverly D'Angelo.
I'd like to think about who those people are, but in the...
Just off the top of my head.
In the smaller scheme, like Reese Coyro, like read.
Well, of course.
Billy Walsh, but
course,
I mean...
but at the time...
remember? I mean, that's a story.
At the time, nobody knew who he was, but outside of you being somebody where they're like, boom, this is the guy, and we'd be lucky to have him. Obviously, James Woods was not going to read for James Woods.
No. Like, anyone who played themselves obviously didn't read for it. That'd be great. Dice, why don't you read for this? But, I mean, Reese, I just want to remember his audition. I mean, because I do... There's sometimes, every once in a while, Kevin Dillon is another one. When Reese auditioned, it was like...
You just knew.
I knew.
Didn't you say that about me?
You didn't audition. Well, I
did kind of.
Sort of.
Right.
But I already knew you. I already knew audition. I wanted you. So that was, again, where it was.
But like Reese dropped out of the sky. You're like, who the fuck is this guy?
Reese dropped out of the sky. I thought, and still
I'm already on the record, my favorite character on Entourage.
But I also, and I believe that's a lot of him, you know.
Scott Kahn offer.
Offer, of course, yeah. I mean, he was playing, oh no, he wasn't playing Scott Kahn, but he was an offer. Seth Green offer. But Reese after that audition, we were like, who the fuck is this guy? This guy's a star. And when he walked, you remember the first day at craft service at lunch? He walked out and it just is something about him. So I still, he's had a good career, but I still think there's big shit ahead for Reese. He's that good.
He's going to land in one of these like weird movies like that somebody falls out of and he's going to get it and he's going to blow
You know
what?
You just need like a role like Kevin Dillon when he played drama.
No, you need that role. Yeah, you know, that role is going to happen for Reese for sure.
But anyway, we got three great guys now. We're 13 days away from shooting. It is, you know, for whatever reason, I feel more pressure than I did when we started because now the timeline is like, now we're like 4 or 5 months and it's time to go. Right. We have no deals with any actors. I got lunatics outside in the world causing trouble.
Do you feel like, I don't want to use momentum because at the end of the day, that the final product will speak for itself, but it's like we were rambling on. That was so corny, so stupid. We were like, we were rolling and then like we shut down like to cut and figure out what we needed to add.
Yeah.
So in the really in the big picture, it doesn't mean anything, but I feel like you're feeling like maybe we lost a little momentum.
I think psychologically momentum is gone. I don't think it matters to the world.
Not at the end of the day.
Yeah. At the end of the day, they're gonna see it. And I know, provided we nail this scene, which we nailed all the other scenes, so it's just like we just got to nail this scene. And you know, these two actors who I, you know, obviously I've seen 50 things they've done, and now they got to meld with my words and hopefully blow up like Carvey Guillen did.
So it's too not, it's not, it's too late for my buddy that's done 80 movies. Should I have him standing by in case this guy is ever?
No, this guy is gonna kill it. I mean, but you know, I think also it's like
I can't believe you thought that you correlated.
Well,
that,
now that you brought it up again, I still believe it.
No, I didn't because here is, I will be honest too. Here's the other thing. Like I bet on this guy so hard that I was looking like, God forbid. At that point, I didn't even want him to do it.
Well, it's
because
just,
I was like, yo, I'm 100% positive. You're like, you're 100% positive. I'm like, well, you can only be 100. You can't be 100. You can be 99.9% positive. You know, at that point, I was like, dude, you know what? I overhyped this.
You know what? I guess part of me.
Sometimes you don't have to look much further than your own backyard is all I'm saying.
I hear what you're saying, and I just wish you would confess to the fact. And you might be right, by the way, because I do actually really trust your instincts with actors. I guess there was something in me that was going. I just, I can't explain it. I don't want, basically, I don't want you to have a bias that you may or may not realize that
right.
you have.
Right, maybe that, and, maybe like he's not as good as I think he is.
Yeah, or not for this, or it's different than I see it, or, you know, anyway, I think we didn't communicate
well. The only reason
well.
I was saying that was, and obviously you'll see when you see the show is based on an incident that happened in real life, right? So tonally, what happened in real life is very specific. Mm-hmm. And just that was what my recommendation was based on, that I believe that that my buddy would have understood the sensibility and tonally what it was of the scene. That's
so,
all I was
so
saying.
Just so everyone's clear, stressed as I was when I walked in here, I'm now even more stressed.
No, but you know what I'm saying?
I do.
And also,
I do,
you know, just because that was what I experienced it and you based the scene on doesn't necessarily mean, you know, like the famous mushroom scene. In Entourage, where I don't talk, you know, remember it was my idea.
Yes,
like it's a great idea. You don't talk. You just cut all your lines out of your episode. People love that.
Yeah,
but that was based on a real story about a buddy of mine that did mushrooms and didn't talk, and it played out way differently. But it was funny. So you know, just because something happens in real life and triggers a storyline doesn't mean you're trying to recreate that moment.
Complete transparency. Now I know that you're a. I'm not saying mad at me. You're a little upset, and you might be right. And two, I'm definitely stressed out. Now, I think this guy's
hilarious. No, I don't
mean
to be stressed out, but I'm saying, are we going for, you know, as like whatever, I guess whatever's funniest, right? But are we like trying to, you know, recreate the sort of tonally that scene or just whatever's funniest?
Well, you got to remember, you told me a story.
Right.
And I wrote it.
Right.
So I see it how I see it now.
Right.
And hopefully.
Well, listen, at the end of the day, who gives a shit about my stories? The scene needs to be funny.
No, but hopefully it all melds together. Right. Works, because when you told me the story, I was laughing my ass off. And every time I think about it, we're talking now, by the way, so just so everyone knows how this happened, this scene was already in the show.
Right.
And then I brought someone in to help me get the script.
Somebody talked you out of cutting that scene.
Everyone, like Dave Perkle, our cinematographer, which really shows you how collaborative I am. The new beginning of this show
was the original beginning. Right.
No, but the beginning of the show that we shot does not work.
Right.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts.
It doesn't
about
work
it.
As an opening.
It doesn't
to
work
to a show.
Yeah, well, it's half of it's in the show now. Like right. Most of it's. Most
but what I'm saying, there's nothing. My point is, there's nothing wrong with the scene. It's just the wrong way to open a show, which is important.
Well, whatever. I mean, it's not in the show, and the opening doesn't work. And now we're going back to while adding some character stuff that I think is necessary for the show. We're bringing this new scene in, but
will you have me tell the actor my side of the story, or will you want to keep it fresh canvas? Well,
did you not get the email today, or yes or no?
Yes, I'm in. Okay. I'm in for that.
Because what we're going to do is, I just want to get on a 20-minute Zoom with the three of us.
Okay.
Just get
because I got a hard out at 10:45. Did I tell you that?
I do have a hard out at 10:45. I just want everyone to know that this show will be the life changer for Kevin, for myself, for Action Park Media, for Beefy Scotty, for fucking Stock Tip. Like, it really will, but Kevin thinks of it sort of like summer stock theater, I think. it's very funny.
That's
But anyway, we're going to get there. All right, so let's move on. 13 days, we shoot there. I got to talk about other things. Fucking Jerry Ferrara. I thought we got him as a regular. Where is he?
We're bringing a Jerry Ferrara podcast to Action Park Media.
Is that right? A separate one?
Yeah, wants to do his own.
So you don't want, he doesn't want to be on this, or you don't want him on it? You want his own spinoff?
He's doing it. He's not really doing a spinoff. He's got a very flushed out idea, which I think is amazing.
Okay.
And we're gonna, you know what, bro? I'm going to green light a season.
All right, but it's irrelevant. Jerry should be on this show. You know, I got a call again today. Australia. They want us to come to Australia. And I know if we've got Jerry too, this whole live show thing is huge.
I would be way more comfortable with Jerry in a live show.
Yeah. So, well, we need him on this. We need to like start building this. So what, you couldn't make a deal or what happened?
We're talking about it. But
I think the audience loves
it. Would you be interested in coming on the other podcast as a guest?
Listen, I think you know.
You love to talk, right?
I love podcasts. I mean, I got the guys from Bagel Boss in Long Island. I'm doing their fucking podcast about bagels.
You'd actually be a good guest on a bagel podcast.
Oh, I could talk bagels, although you haven't really said anything to me. Do you not notice anything different about
you're
me?
Skinny.
Wow.
Okay. Well, you told me before, but I thought that. I said, you look good, Doug. You're like, I lost
weight. I am down like 9 pounds. I have not had meat or dairy. Maybe a piece of butter. I have not really had meat or dairy in, besides the screening where I had 40 slices of awesome pizza, I have not had meat or dairy in like 30 days.
Is there a name to this diet?
No. There's the no added sugar, no red meat, no sweets.
But what's it called?
It's just called Doug Ellen's diet.
It's just Doug Ellen's diet. Yeah. Jesus Christ. We should try to sell
it.
And
I have to get back.
Hey, yo, somebody grab that Instagram handle before Doug starts launching another fucking alternate ego.
Oh, I should do another diet podcast. But I need to get back on the push-ups. My shoulder is killing me for my high-end pickleball life.
I saw that. I saw the clip. I saw the pickle clip. I mean,
come on.
Yeah.
And I was playing with this guy. You know this guy? This guy, Beefy, you probably knows him. David Dobrik. I mean, he's like a huge influencer. I didn't even know who he was. But he's got like, I don't know, 400 million followers.
He's a huge YouTuber. How's his game?
He's definitely a tennis player. So he's got good skills. He needs to learn pickleball, but he's good.
I mean, does he go to the net?
He was getting to the net. You know what? He's a smart kid. He'll get good, but you know. But I was playing. I mean, these are 25-year-olds, and I just fucking. And I played with Steve Bellamy's kid too. Steve Bellamy, who's president of the Kodak, who got us our film. I played with his kid yesterday, who was like a UCLA Division I tennis player. So,
right.
But all the tennis players are coming to the sport now. I wish you would
pickleball's
really start
big,
playing.
Man.
It.
Pickleball's big.
All right. So Jerry Ferrara is not going to be a regular on this podcast. Is that what I'm to understand?
I think once we get him in the family network, then we'll have him on.
So Connolly's working deals. I think what I want to say to the Victory audience: harass Jerry. Tell him how much you loved him on the podcast.
He knows how much. He knows how
I want them to tell him even more.
They know.
And then let's talk about my birthday gift. Came in finally.
Yeah, yeah.
My Once Upon a Time in Hollywood poster.
Poster.
Signed by Leo. I mean,
And that frame was not, that's one that you want to frame. And by the way, Doug, listen, come on. You could dress it up however you want. If you don't think that any free thinking human being doesn't know that that was a shot at Russell Wilson, that you're going down the hallway and you're like looking for a spot for the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood poster.
I wasn't trying to be discreet. That poster's going in the garbage.
That was a bazooka.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's not like,
I mean, that was a Tomahawk missile. There was nothing subtle about that.
I mean, first of all, let's be clear. Like,
can we hang it up here in Action Park?
Yeah.
Does it got your name on it?
Yeah, it's signed to me and it's got pictures of my kids, my kids with him. But anyway, by the way, like, I don't want to turn this into something like I have a beef with this huge star, but you know, it's only like a few years ago where we were like bigger stars than he was, or you guys were, and he was perfectly happy to ride off of some of our stuff. So
you were making me retweet his tweets.
Yeah, yeah. I used to, his boring tweets. But anyway.
I think you sent the clear message with the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Listen, I have a small following, so he'll probably never see it, but that picture is going in the trash. You want it in here? It's going in there.
Garage.
Because it is, it's actually a personal affront to me to even be in my house. Right. I'm being serious.
Like, right. You got to get offended every time you walk down the stairs.
Yeah, who wants that?
Who wants that at home?
And I also think the Broncos are going nowhere. That's my personal opinion.
Oh, boy. All right. So
I'm just going to speak my truth. I bust my ass to be loyal to people, and when they are not the same, I dislike
them. You take down their photos?
I take down their photos. I'm not trying to do anything else. I mean,
there's no photos of me on that wall. If I'm not on an Entourage poster.
I took down a couple of things after you didn't respond to the
after you thought I was freezing
actor.
You out on the actor.
All right. Well, I'm disappointed about the Jerry thing. I may have to go around you and talk to him.
Please do.
Because it sounds like to me is you're like, listen, I can get Jerry another podcast. But
no, that's not true because it's all the same thing. I mean, Bill Simmons, The Ringer, they're all over the place. The more, the merrier. Everybody's invited.
I think, felt like Jerry enjoyed it.
I thought so too. I think when Dylan comes back, we invite Jerry and all four of us to catch a podcast. But today, when we come back from the break, we went a little rogue today. We're going to answer some voicemail questions from some Entourage, curious Entourage fans after the break. Welcome back. Victory of the Podcast. Kevin Connolly with Doug Allen. Doug Allen's furious. I take his intros. I love it. You love it?
No, I'm not.
That
furious.
Didn't bother you at that time?
No, I was really thinking about like
other stuff.
How thin I am right now, and I gotta put on like 8 pounds of muscle again. I got to get those push-ups going again and the weights. You know what I got, though, is Oliver Trevino got me a climber. Have you seen the climbers?
What is that?
Which, it's a climber. I don't know. Yeah. It's almost like a Stairmaster, but it's called a climber. It's very cool.
Right, where it's like you're doing this.
Yeah, but it's like a full workout, and I don't know. I'm very motivated to get in as good a shape as I've ever been in my life as I'm aging. So
I always see LeBron on those things.
On the climber?
Looks hard, yeah.
Yeah, it's a workout.
It's working for LeBron, bro.
I did like 90 seconds yesterday, and I was winded, so it's weird.
That's a tough workout.
It's a different type of thing.
All right, this is unconventional for Victory the Podcast. We've done it in bits and pieces, but let's give it another try. Scotty, fire a question at us.
Ignacio Cortez from San Bernardino, California. And I know every guy has it. Every person has it. I just wonder, what are your guys' guilty pleasure songs? You know, that song that you like, that you probably shouldn't, that you sing to in the car when you're by yourself and pretend not to care about when your friends are around.
Interesting. I mean, I get the question. Obviously, we're not embarrassed about anything, but like, what's a song, like an untraditional song that like, if I were to get in your car, go, that was kind of weird. Doug, what are you listening to? What would be something that outside of the box, song-wise, for Doug Allen?
So I am who I am. It is, I have no...
Right, you're not embarrassed about it, but like, what would be
I'm not
embarrassed
song? About, but I honestly, if we're talking all time, like...
Not all time, but like...
I have been...
You're since, Taylor Swift.
Since
I knew it.
Pandemic started.
Fucking guy loves Taylor Swift.
I mean, beyond...
unhealthy love for Taylor Swift.
I mean, she's fucking brilliant, but my daughter gets embarrassed because I'll roll down the windows and I'll sing. It's these last two albums, by the way. They're really genius, and I'm not a dumb music person. I know good music, and she is going to go down as one of the great singer-songwriters. I'm telling you right now, like a Springsteen type. That's how good this new stuff is. I'm not talking the old pop stuff, which I'm fine with. These last two albums are genius, but when you talk about stuff, because I'm a singer in the car, and I don't care what anyone thinks about my voice.
I wouldn't. Oh, this.
Sarah's, you know, videotaped me and sent it. But I mean, like, when Meatloaf died, I mean, I went back to my listening to Meatloaf and Bat Out of Hell. I mean, I could blast out the tongue. 2 out of 3. I mean, but
by the way, listen, not for nothing. I've done that. I can do that with karaoke.
I mean,
I've done that song karaoke, and it's a tough one because it's like 7 minutes long.
Yeah,
and you gotta really fully commit. That's something. Yeah. All right, so Meatloaf and Taylor Swift.
I mean, there's so many. I mean, there was a good story since we brought up Mike Young earlier, like 7 years ago. Like Adele's 21 came out, I think. Right. And like, I just started playing it. And
like, hello?
Before Hello. Oh. This was the one before, and it's that song, Someone Like You. And right. I honestly drove around for like an hour listening to this fucking album over and over and over. And I call Mike.
Trying to feel something?
Yeah. And I call Mike Young, who's like, you know, Mike Young is like a 6'2 boxer athlete.
Mike paces around. Mike's known for pacing around the house listening to sad songs.
So I
it's
call.
Like his thing.
By the way, I'm a big sad song guy. I just love to like
REO Speedwagon. Like sad music.
Yeah, but it's even sadder than that. But so I'm playing Adele and I call Mike Young and I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, I'm embarrassed to say. And it was the album just came out. I said, what? He goes, I'm just driving around listening to this new Adele album.
Really?
And I said, that is crazy. So we were on the same page. But I love
Taylor Swift.
Sad songs. I often will Google sad songs. I have a list and mixed albums, playlists of sad songs.
I love 70s sad songs.
Yeah.
Like I love Lionel Richie. I mean, like,
Sail
Endless
On.
Love.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It's weird. I can't picture because you're like a hip hop guy. I don't picture you.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Listen, I'm super extreme one way or the other. I'm either like, you know, Tupac and like fired up adrenaline, or I'm listening to, you know, I listen to, you know, Amy Stewart, Knock on Wood. You better knock, knock, knock on wood. I was listening to that today.
I don't think that's sad at all.
That's not a sad song, but it's outside the box.
So I'll tell you, because
it's not a guilty pleasure because I'm like you. I don't give a fuck. I listen to whatever I want.
Yeah, I don't.
But I do like a little Meatloaf and I like a little REO Speedwagon.
But I will say one of the
Air Supply.
I was gonna throw in an Air Supply, but I really can't listen to them anymore. I did back in the day. But one of the Cheap Trick, The Flame, is a very good sad song. But so one of the great scenes in movie history, which everyone should check out, Albert Brooks, who you know was one of my influences that I wanted to be grown up. I wanted to write, direct, star in movies. Didn't happen, whatever. But one of the great movies of all time, Modern Romance. Have you ever seen this, Kevin?
I have not.
All right. So he eats a Quaalude, which this audience is not going to know what a Quaalude is, except for from Wolf of Wall Street. Okay. But without drinking, for real, it was the greatest drug ever invented. It was a legal drug at the time. And I have partook when I was younger. But the scene in the movie is Albert.
You're addicted to Quaaludes?
No. I only did it twice in my life, but it was great. It was like drinking 12 beers with no side effects whatsoever. As long as you don't drink. If you drink, you have the Wolf of Wall Street experience where you black out and you wake up and you destroy the Ferrari.
But Fast Times Regiment High, people on lewds should not drive.
So Modern Romance, everyone needs to watch this one scene. Albert Brooks. He's depressed over his breakup with his girlfriend. He eats a Quaalude. Bruno Kirby from Entourage, one of my favorites, is his guy who gives it
offer
to him. Yeah, and Albert Brooks, which is exactly what happens, kind of like ecstasy. You love everybody, and everybody just feels a little better to you. So Albert Brooks starts going through his Rolodex and starts calling women, and he calls this one woman, and she's like, I don't even think you remembered me. And he's like, don't remember you. I'm in love with you. What are you talking about? I'm taking you out tomorrow night. It's going to be the greatest date ever. Yada, yada, yada. Anyway, next day, he wakes up. He goes. He's got this date that he set up while he was on Quaaludes. He picks up this woman, and he says to her as he gets there, I'm spoiling it, but it's from 1975. Sorry. But he picks her up, and he goes, I'm really sorry, but I was on drugs last night. And I barely remember you, but we're going to have a great time. Now, she was expecting this love. Anyway, they get in the car. He drives around, and Michael Jackson's She's Out of My Life comes on. It plays as he drives around the block, and he pulls right back up to her house, and he goes, I'm dating too soon. I just broke up with somebody. and it's just a phenomenal.
She's Out of My Life. It's a sad one.
Oh, it's a great song.
It's a gut wrencher.
Yeah,
it's a gut wrencher. What other questions we got, Scott? Hit us with something else.
Hey, guys. This is Andrew from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Just a quick question for you, fellows. I was wondering when you had guest appearances on and they were portrayed a little bit differently than how they act in real life. For example, Seth Green, if you ever heard a story of them having a negative encounter with somebody or work with. Thanks, guys.
It's a good question.
Yeah, well, Dom didn't actually play himself, but he was called Dom.
But he's called Dom, and his name is Dom, and Dom's tough to miss. Dom's a very recognizable guy.
So he took a lot of shit after that episode, the first one, and he's one of the sweetest people
I know. The nicest guy in the whole world.
But he was walking around New York, and people were like, boo.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one time Dom and I were on the street. I bumped into him, like, leaving an audition, literally, and he and I were just shooting the shit on the side of the road. We were actually both smoking cigarettes at the time, and people were like, people were fucking wigged out that Dom and I was standing outside smoking a cigarette. They would roll down the windows like, get away from me. They were screaming. So, but I don't know. Cause you know, he's very, Seth Green is like, Seth Green's got a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
And he don't give a fuck. But I would guess that he probably hears a bunch of shit.
Oh, I'm sure he gets the Jaeger crew
and tell Sloan I set it up. I mean, I'm sure he gets it. We worked on Entourage for 2 days.
But, you know, on the good side, and Bob Saget always said this to me, he's like, it opened up his career to a whole other generation of people that saw him in a very different way.
Right.
So I, you know, the most negative thing we ever got.
But some people were concerned about it. What didn't Chris Penn didn't want to beat up Dylan.
Yeah. Scott Conn didn't want to beat you up.
That's it. Scott Conn
was originally going to play the Seth Green role. Well, not, he wasn't going to play
it. But that's what it was kind of based after. Right. He's like, I don't even want people to think that it could be even be a fight between Conn.
It was one of my favorite Hollywood encounters ever. And now Scott is one of my best friends, but I'd never met him in my life. And we went to Dan Tana's for
dinner. But he was like kind of tiptoeing around. Like, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to, you know.
Yeah. And it's a funny thing, too, because Scott Conn is not a big guy.
Right.
But he's a fucking animal.
He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu.
But I mean, he's tough as shit.
Yeah.
So he's got the skills and he's got the mindset of a guy that you really don't want to fuck with. Correct. I don't care how small he is. But the first time I had dinner with him, I didn't know anything about his skills or anything about his own personality.
I just thought it was funny, right?
Well, I just thought like, I mean, okay, maybe you could beat Conley, maybe you couldn't, but do we really like, it's not like I'm asking Lawrence Taylor to pick on him, but you were like, no, Scott Conn will kill me.
Well, I said, yeah, I mean, like Scott was always handy to have around.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, let's face it. Scott's a good guy to have on your side, but he didn't want to come off as a bully kind of thing. Yeah. Like basically I'll kill Connolly and I just don't want to give off that vibe that I'm capable of killing Connolly.
It was really funny because Scott is, you know, Scott Conn and Rob Weiss have this similar thing. They're like these neurotic Jewish tough guys.
Right.
So they kind of have this weird combination of very tough and very like Scott is not scared of a 6'5", 240-pound man, but he's scared of germs on the fucking counter. You know,
And what was the Chris Penn story? Chris Penn,
he just didn't.
I know what it was. He needed to be triggered a little bit more. He's like, this is not enough for me to be beating the shit out of Kevin Dillon.
Right.
Because if I beat the shit out of Kevin Dillon on this, I would look like an asshole.
Yeah.
So have him throw a little more at me to motivate me to beat him up. Right. Something like that. Yeah. So people were concerned, right?
And a lot of people, we know from the writers, like they knew that people thought this show was taken seriously by people. So they wanted to make sure whatever they want to portray, like Saget was so great because he was like, I don't care what you do to me,
right,
except for don't make me poor, he said. But like Stephen Gagan, one of the great screenwriters.
Wrote Syriana.
I think he's an Oscar winner.
Or a nominee for sure.
But he was like, you know, I just don't say I get paid less than what I get paid because people will take that.
In Gagan's defense, he said, I'm pretty sure he said, like, listen, with all the humility in the world, I just don't want people to think that I get paid $25,000 a week.
He was so nice about it.
Well, it's 200 or whatever.
But I said, I'll bump your quote way up.
Let's go 500. Yeah, let's go 500.
But very few people just said,
I don't give a fuck. James Woods and Bob Saget.
James Cameron. Because I said to James Cameron, who told me a whole story.
This is a great one, right.
But James Cameron told, maybe you were there.
He just said, my movie can't be a bomb.
But he said that at the Oscars, James Cameron said Harvey Weinstein, the animal scumbag that he is, Harvey Weinstein came up to Cameron and after he won for Titanic and said, hey, Miss James Cameron, Harvey Weinstein, friend of the filmmaker. And Cameron said something to him like, if you're such a friend of the filmmaker, why did you fire my friend off of whatever
so
it was?
And so he fired some stars.
He said that Harvey Weinstein tried to hit him with his Academy Award that I think he won for whatever he won for.
Right.
So it was literally like a fight.
Oscar fight?
Yeah. So Mr. Sir Cameron, I really do. There's not a lot of people I respect more than James Cameron in this business or love or idolize.
And again, he did us a solid. I mean, he was awesome.
He did us a solid, but he was also, you know, I've talked about this a little bit before, but I had dinner with this guy and I was listening to him talk about things that I was just like, how can I think I should be in the same business as this guy?
I cannot do that.
He's a genius. I mean, he is. So, but I said to him, would you mind saying fucking Harvey at the end of that scene? And I was very nervous to say it to him, even though he told me that whole story. I'm like, now I'm crossing a line. He goes, oh, I'll say it.
I can't wait. I'm happy to say it.
Yeah,
I'm happy to say it. But also, side note, before we take the next question, James Cameron also called Duggan in no uncertain terms that no movie of mine can be a bomb.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he wrote a letter.
And he's right.
Yeah.
Do you still have that letter? By the way, you've got to just find that letter. Just make a thing of it and find it, dude, because it's going to be worth something.
There's no doubt that I have that letter somewhere.
Lucas, save that. Have that for Lucas.
But But that's an NFT. I mean, this is, I'm being serious.
NFT.
I'm serious.
Let's sell it. We'll put it in the lobby.
This is a page, handwritten letter from James Cameron that I, to this day, do not know if he was, I know he was being serious, but he went into such detail.
He's right.
Of course he's right. And it changed the course of the show.
Now, let me ask this, and I know this is weird, and we're going to get to the next question. Do you have, like there's things missing in my house, but I go, like, if I really emptied out this area, or, like, I could zero down, like, it's buried, but it's over in this. Do you have a general idea where to begin to looking for that?
I believe it's in the garage. I believe it's, you know, it's definitely not in the trash heap with Russell Wilson's jersey.
Right, it's not hanging with Russell Wilson. But I like the way, I like to go through your garage. Oh, you probably got some gems in there. Treats.
I got the Ari paint gun in there, which...
Let's hang that in the office.
I mean, we could... Listen, if I thought it was safe here, because, by the way...
That's just sitting in the garage?
Coming to Action Park, yes.
Scotty, it's at the fucking the Smithsonian. Like, where's it going to be?
I don't know. I would hang that. That's, like, iconic.
It's hanging. No, it's hanging in my garage. My garage is like a gym.
No, what happened was...
It's where I'm on the climber,
truthfully,
I look at it.
I've had to do that, too. There's some things that, like, you don't have the wall space for, but you don't want to just stick it on the floor, so you hang it in the garage. I got things hanging.
My garage is like a gym, so I have a bunch of... jerseys that I care about in there. J.J. Watt and Tavares is in there.
Shane O'Brien was like, yo, Cons, where's my jersey? I hate to bring it to you, but it's in the garage. Now, that's not to say if I get a bigger house one day, if Ramble On takes off or Action Park Media and I have a bigger house, you can make it. But currently, he's in the garage.
It's really crazy, though. I legitimately do not have a spot.
Let's make this a thing. Let's find that letter, bro, because you should just have it. But okay, moving on. Scotty, next question.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Tyler Mendelson, your favorite Marine Corps veteran filmmaker.
Film festival winner.
So my question is for the final season and the transition to the movie. It always kind of bothered me that the whole season we're focused on Sophia Lear and Vince getting with her. He ends up marrying her, and then suddenly we transition to the movie and they're divorced within a day. So I was wondering if that was a creative decision, or did she just, like, decline signing up for the movie, or, like, how did that work? Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
This guy Tyler's amazing. Yeah. I love you, Tyler. Yeah.
If he wasn't a Marine, though, he's criticizing us.
No, he wasn't criticizing you. He said it what bothered him.
Yeah, it bothered him.
No. He didn't say the storyline bothered him. What bothered him is that the storyline just, boom, vanished. And he's like, why did that storyline happen?
So,
which is a good question. So to sum up Tyler's question, we did. Season 8. There's a lot going on. You're trying to tie up. It's the end of the series as we know it. And you're tying up this relationship where Vince is going to run off and do the Hollywood marriage thing, right?
Yeah. So, two things. I thought the show was over.
Right. Okay?
Like, never, ever to be seen again. When we ended the show, even though, you know, I've talked about this a little bit.
Dreams of the movie or whatever.
I didn't have any of those pipe dreams. I was making two other shows, which both did not get picked up.
Right.
But I was making two other shows. And honestly, like... It just seemed like the perfect ending when they flew off in separate planes. I just thought it was the perfect ending.
Right.
And, you know, I've talked about this on this podcast before, but I was going to kill Vince, and I was going to do it in a way that I thought was going to be emotional and shocking, and it was probably the wrong move. But Mark Wahlberg said, let's have lunch, which, you know, Mark was the best producer ever, but he didn't often read a script and have comments. But he said, we're going to make a movie. We're going to make
it. You don't kill Vince, right? Just like why they were going to kill Rock Stallone at the end of Rocky V.
I mean, they killed James Gandolfini at the end of Sopranos, I think.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. The point is that you never knew until later, but whatever. So I guess.
So, but anyway, I the show was over and that was it. When we came back for the movie, what I at least tried to spend my time on, which I still, again, I don't think the movie financially, it was not overly successful. It broke even. So
well, it's also what most people don't know about the movie is that it was financially not an expensive movie.
Yeah.
It was no like blockbuster. We did that at a very, very, very reasonable price.
Yeah. But, you know, unfortunately it didn't, you know, blow up critically or box office wise. But as I've often said before, our test screenings were off the charts and our exit polls were off the charts. We had the highest exit polls of the weekend, which means those who did buy a ticket walked out and got a survey and they said, what'd you think of the movie? We did better than the movie Spy that opened the same weekend, whatever that's worth. I'm not making excuses. People don't like it. What I was trying to do with that movie was get back to the vibe of season one, which I thought was people's favorite, or season two, when it was the guys. And I didn't think having Vince tied down, married.
Yeah, you need Vince single on the boat, having fun, party.
That's what I thought. And also Alice Eve, who's amazing.
She became a giant movie star.
Her career took off while we were sitting on our ass getting pilots not picked up. She was blowing up and she was not available. But honestly, and I love Alice, if she was available, it would have been a small thing. It was also based on reality, and I forget who it was at the time, but some star had run off to Vegas, got married, got divorced in 3 days. So, I mean, and that's what it was based on. Anyway, Tyler, thank you for your service, not for your criticism.
Hey, this is Woody in Buffalo. I have a question. What was Eve's favorite car to drive during the show?
Okay, well, that's a good question. Quick one. Quick answer. The Aston Martin Lightyears. I mean, I always thought the Maserati was a super sharp-looking car, but in terms of just getting in the car and driving it, I mean, I think the Aston Martin, no offense, Maserati, the Aston Martin blew the doors off it. That was by far my favorite car.
A couple of things to get going on there. I mean, we had so many amazing cars, and my favorite, I know I didn't get to drive it, but I did because they let me drive it off camera, but the Porsche Panamera was the greatest freaking car ever. But I just want to say one thing, which I'm hoping Connolly actually found this out because he was supposed to. But since that call was from Buffalo, greatest post ever from the Buffalo Sabres the other day. So anyway, since this call is from Buffalo, I just have to give a shout out. You know, Connolly and I are diehard Islander fans, and everyone's always asked, well, how do you have allegiance to other teams? Not, I don't have allegiance to other teams ever, but when
we got
when
a new guy like that we us, like on the Buffalo Sabres, that's for sure.
Matias Samuelson, I mean, they posted it the other day, and we will show it on our social clip, but he's got his sport jacket.
Well, they have to wear suits, right? You have to be in a suit from when you're walking into the hotel or the team bus or whatever it is, and he whips open that, you know, that inside pocket, and he's got
all the Entourage posters.
What's the interior of your suit called? What is that called?
The inseam?
Lapel? No, it's not the lapel. On the outside. The inseam, the lining. He opens his suit and it's all Entourage shit. With quotes. I mean, it was
really
awesome.
We got to show a picture of that. We got to give a shout out to him. And if the Islanders aren't going to win, I hope the Sabres will win before the...
Well, they're out of it as well.
I understand that. But I mean, next year, if the Islanders aren't going to win, which this season was a disaster. But I just want to say...
It was nice.
But when we get criticism, when you see a young guy... And then we got a tweet the other day from the coach of the Minnesota NCAA team. The Gophers, I think. You know, he's going to take some time off after the season and watch his favorite show, Entourage. It does. It makes me feel really good to think we've been off the air.
That suit was next level.
But 11 years we've been off the air. So when people are talking about it, and I think hopefully they're going to talk about Ramble On soon.
Here we go.
Hey, this is Patrick from Albany, New York. Big fan of the show, guys. Big fan of everything, the pod, everything. My question is, since you and Connolly are such big Islanders fans, how come there hasn't been or wasn't more hockey players or any Islanders players on the show? Just wondering. I always liked the athletes they had on there, and being from New York, it was great to see a lot of New York guys. So once again, big fan. Thanks, guys.
You know, Lou Lamoriello runs a tight ship. And if I'm being totally honest, I wonder if I think Lou Lamoriello might not like me too much. I don't think he might be. I don't know. You know, we've tried to get a couple players. We've been shot down by PR and that kind of thing. And, you know, we did victory with Bud Light, right? You know, with the Rams, right? We're good enough. Action Park's good enough for the Rams. Why couldn't we do something like that for the Islanders? So I don't know what's going on behind closed doors.
I didn't know anything about this.
I feel like the Islanders are maybe distancing themselves from me. By the way, the Islanders, if you're not mad at me, sorry, but I don't know. I'm feeling like I'm getting a little silent treatment. You're pulling a Doug Ellen on me. What do you got?
What's up, guys? This is Chris with the Lou on Instagram. Huge fan of the show. Huge fan of the podcast. And I've put together a massive amount of Entourage trivia. So I want to ask you guys a question and see if you can get it right.
I don't want to work.
You're terrible at this one.
What song was playing at the club when drama dumped Tanya, his masculine girlfriend? You know who Tanya is. What song was playing at the club when he dumped her? I'm not going to give you the answer. I'm sure you can look it up.
I'm not even in the conversation on this one. I'll be honest. I have no... I remember... Sorry to cut your trivia question off, but I know he's talking about the muscle girlfriend, right? Where it's like, look at these guns.
Well, I got to tell you know, Ali Musica, who you know was like my right hand on the show. And a lot of songs that, let's say, again, I picked at the end of the day, but if I didn't...
Do you know the song?
I do. I think I do.
Right.
I think I do, but it was definitely her pick.
But I don't think he was knocking the song. I just think it's an obscure question. I'm shocked that you haven't guessed.
By the way, I was not... You have a tendency to do that. I was not saying I don't like the song.
You feel like I'm gaslighting
I like the song. I was just going to say, some of the picks that Ali made to go into scenes that I remember...
Clearly it stood out to that guy.
The Doors at the end of where you guys are sitting on the beach in season one, which is Peace Frog. That was Allie. Change by Blind Melon. I don't even remember where that went, but I loved it so much. fake plastic trees.
Do you have an answer for the trivia question?
I believe I do. I believe it's Toxic by Britney Spears. And if it's a song where Dylan's dancing, which is one of my favorite moments.
Well, when he breaks up with her, he does
Entourage.
Break up with her on the dance floor, right? I mean,
I don't remember. Right. I just remember Dylan dancing to that song, and everything about it was hilariously perfect.
I'm shocked you have a guess, but you do. Toxic.
I want to throw one out there. Hotel California by
Eagles?
Gypsy Kings?
No, because it's in Spanish. We did use that.
Great one.
I couldn't tell you where we used that. Wait, no, I could. We used that on the balcony at the end of
Chateau Reese, Marmont.
That's right.
Yeah. Before we go off to Columbia.
Before we go to Columbia.
We'll be coming up on that episode, and then we're going to get into Medellin, which is going to be fun, and we'll get Reese back in here. But all right, Doug, you pulled out that trivia. I would have never in a million years thought you would.
Thank God they're not asking about writing, because I don't remember any of it anymore.
That's interesting. Toxic from Britney Spears. Also, too, I don't even know that that's a guilty pleasure, but at any given time, you could hear Britney Spears blasting out of my
you
car.
You should watch Dylan. We should put that in a social clip. Dylan dancing to Toxic. I don't know. I said this to Dylan on the podcast. I don't know what he's doing because he's a good dancer, but it's so funny. I don't know why.
Dylan's got rhythm.
Yeah, but he's somehow also bringing comedy to it as well.
It's comedy dancing.
He's a genius. It's a shame him and Jerry are not here. I got to be honest
with you. You're stuck with me.
What's up, Victory guys? This is Ryan from actually Los Angeles, California. I just have a question for Dylan and Connolly.
Oops.
Any scene in particular that you could remember as an actor that you were nervous or like uncomfortable, like a huge monologue? Do you remember that scene? And how did you prepare for that? Did you get a coach? What was the rehearsal like for that?
So obviously, but this is, I want you to weigh in on this. So obviously, you know, that's kind of a loaded question. There's been a bunch of those, but one thing that jumps out at my mind, and it's funny because it was not a monologue, and we had very few lines, and it was when we did the Can episode. And, you know, if you remember, we pull up on the red carpet, and, you know, at this point, the show wasn't really over there. People didn't really know who we were. The production team pulled off a miracle, and they were able to get us on the red carpet to shoot. But we literally, it was the Ocean's 11 or 12 premiere, whatever it was, and they basically said when George Clooney or Pitt or whoever leaves the red carpet, you guys have 90 seconds. We'll hold everybody there for you guys for 90 seconds to do the scene. So we knew we were only going to get one crack at it. And I can remember sitting there we're like getting out of the car. And as we're getting ready to roll, I was looking and my hands were shaking.
Wow.
My hands were literally shaking because I'm like, I just don't want them. It's like, it was so big and there was so much at stake. We literally flew halfway around the world. And there was two lines, and I'm just like, I couldn't. It's funny, like, what did I do? It's one of maybe the few times in my life that I've meditated. Wow. In the sense where I was like, just breathe, close your eyes. But I was like shaking. I just didn't want to be the one to fuck it up. And then the curveball was, which we'll get to with all the guys in here when we cover the episode. We were there earlier in the morning rehearsing on the red carpet, but we rehearsed and there was nobody there. When we actually got out of the car, it was so loud that we couldn't hear each other's dialogue. So it was like, then it became a lip reading thing. And it was like, and honestly, when it ended, I'm like, I don't know that we got it. I was a fucking nervous wreck.
And by the way, two things. It's amazing. Incredible. The scene, the way it looks.
Right.
Mylod, right?
Yeah. Mylod. There was cameras everywhere, but
our director, Mark Mylod, who does Succession, Shameless, is like probably the best TV director in the world
for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
But, and he's going to do the podcast at some point. What I love about doing this podcast, a couple things. We decided not to call it the Entourage Podcast. And I love that people are calling up and calling us the Victory Guys now. It's nice. And hopefully this will morph into Ramble On, which everybody check out that podcast next. Jesus. We'll get into more details. The weird thing is Connolly still thinks it's like a battle, even though
Rogue.
He's on it. It's Action Park Media and it's the
thing I like about Ramble On is that I can go back to my roots where I'm just funnier when I'm in the booth.
Good.
Because I'm making comments and you don't even know that they're there. It's just way easier to take shots at
you. But what I want to say about this podcast is, which is why it's been so great. As close of friends as I've been with Dylan Connolly, Jerry hopefully will be a regular on here. I learned things about these guys that I'm being very serious.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know you have ever been nervous in a scene ever. Like that.
It's not listen, scenes are contained, right? And when you're on a show, particularly you're one of the leads of a show, I'm not worried about blowing a line and having to go back as long as I'm prepared as an actor.
So you were like, But I was like,
this is just so much at stake here. And there was so much. And it was not like a, hey, we go back to do this. We had one shot to do it. And I just got caught up in the moment. And I remember like looking and I was like, if you looked at me, you would see my hands shaking.
That is, I'm going to look at that.
I had to put my head back and literally like.
Can you see any of this in the scene?
No. Once I got out of the car, the adrenaline hit me, but we were literally waiting in line, right? We were like, they stuck us in a line and like whoever's getting out. And then the car pulled up and it was just like, at that point, the adrenaline kicked in. Dylan tells the story where Dylan, if you remember, he's with the girl Dylan in this one shot that we get. One shot. Dylan's got to scale a chain link fence, run across the street, catch up with us, hit the line. So many things could have gone wrong. And it was fucking perfect in one take.
I mean, it's so awesome because it reminds me, and we had Rob Weiss, who, you know, was a writer and executive producer on the show and was the basis of the Billy Walsh character since we were just talking about him. But Rob, it's hard to imagine this, but he makes this little movie called Amongst Friends, which everyone should check out. It's a real Long Island
Indie.
It's a legit indie, and it really is like a real look at how we grew up. And he makes this movie, becomes the hit of Sundance. He's 22 years old, just like Billy Walsh, and he becomes this big star. And Barry Levinson, who at the time is the biggest director in the world, puts him in his movie, Jimmy Hollywood, with Joe Pesci, and as an actor, playing himself, Rob Weiss. And he has to do this scene, which, like you just explained, is this really long tracking shot where 40 different things have to happen.
And then it comes to you.
And then it comes to Rob Weiss, who's never acted a day in his life. It's a 2-minute shot, blah, blah, blah. Keeps going, 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 going. Rob blows his line.
Wait, it lands on him and he blows the line. Yikes.
And Joe Pesci goes, I guess this is going to be a long fucking day. And like, how do you function after that? So you guys, you had the stuff at the Laker game where you couldn't hear each other talking.
This was different, bro. This was different.
On the red carpet. I've seen that George Clooney was on the carpet. Yeah, Angelina and Brad Pitt on the carpet. The fuck,
everybody that you ever saw and that you ever knew in your life was on this carpet. And it just like, the other thing too, like Entourage, we were kind of an indie kind of a show. But at the back of your head, like there was tomorrow.
Yeah.
If some disaster, we didn't get something at the Earth Cafe, like we're going to come back and get it at some point. Right. This was like, I don't know. The pressure got to me. And then sitting in the car waiting, we were like waiting in line. Like we were real, like we were being treated as if we were really in a movie.
Right.
Right. So it was like this car. And then just like, there was just like dead silence in the car. There was like a walkie talkie of somebody like cueing us like, all right. And it was just,
it's really awesome. Yeah, it's a great story. And it's also to think about the idea in France. Nobody knew what Entourage was at that time. The stars on that red carpet had no idea who you guys were. And we had paid paparazzi to act like Vince was this big star.
They were handing out headshots that said Vincent Chase. So they could all the paparazzi, all the foreign paparazzi could be screaming his name.
That is a great episode. I can't wait to get into deep diving that.
Dude, once we're, you know, season three and then, but when we get into start season four, episode one, you know, Welcome to the Jungle and the Medellin, it's going to be great.
Well, I love it. Anyway, the last thing, as I said, learning about these guys, I mean, Connolly did the Entertainer podcast with our girlfriends, and he said I was his best friend. I mean, you said it. I heard it. It made me uncomfortable.
What you said, which is the same thing. It's like at a certain point, like it's that doesn't even, not even the word. It's
you
like
said
we're
the
brothers,
words.
Unfortunately.
Everyone, yeah, everyone can hear it. You said it. I actually said we were brothers, not best friends, but you said we were best friends. We can get matching tattoos.
That was misquoted.
All right, we'll be back. Victor, the podcast.